The daf is daf nun alf. So we got to the top, we got to two lines down, the two dots. The Gemara has a ma'isa. So what we've been talking about up until now was that when it comes to giving mezonos to the banos, you could only take from the metalton. That's what we were discussing up until now. So the Gemara has a ma'isa. Hahu yasum v'yosoma. There is an orphan, a boy and a girl. De asu l'kam di Rava. They both presented themselves in front of Rava. And Amar lahu Rava. Rava says to them, Helu liyasom bishul yasoma. Give money to the yasom so that there's surplus that the yasom could go give to his sister, the yasoma. So the Gemara says, Amri le Rabbanan, Rabbanan, the Talmidim said to Rava, V'hamar, who, isn't it Mar himself? Don't you say, Damar mi mar karkari v'lo mi v'tatali? Bein le mezoni, bein le ksuva, bein le farnasa? You hold that you could only collect from karka in order to feed the daughters, to feed the yasomos. But to take from a talton here, you say that you can use it to, whether it's for mezonos, whether it's for ksuva, whether it's for parnasa, you can never use from the metalton. So Amalhu Rav responds back to the Rabbanan, Ilu ratza shivcha l'shamsho milo yahavinale. So let's say the Yasam wanted to hire for himself a shivcha in order to serve him, to provide things for him. Would we not give him money to do that? Certainly here, with regards to the Yasoma, that there are two things. Rashi explains, Achosa, one is the sister, and number two is Dishmashenu. I guess the situation was that the Yasoma is going to serve him, going to cook for him, clean the house for him. So therefore, she's a shivcha plus being his sister. So we're allowed to give him surplus in order to feed his sister.
Where do we get that Rabbi said that's only metalton, that it's that they were taking money from metalton?
Right, so it's a good question. It's apparently the Gemara later on Samach Tesman Beis. We haven't seen him say this yet, but it's similar to the Shaila we've been discussing up until now.
Okay.
But you're right, we haven't seen Rav himself say this yet. So the Gemara said, well, Harry's not coming, and David would have been here already. And David knows the combination anyways. Aaron wasn't privy for the combination, I guess. So the Gemara says, Tani Rabbanan. David only knows because he watched me do it so many times. I never told him. So the Gemara says, Tani Rabbanan. Whether it be property that has achrayos, which is just another way of saying karka, or whether it be things that don't have achrayos, which is another way of saying metalton. So bein bekarka bein metalton, the loch is motzin lemazon isha ulebanos divi rabbi. You could take out, Rashi explains, motzin min hayisomim. So let's say the father dies and all the property falls to the yisomim. So you could take out from their property, whether it be karka or metalton, in order to pay for the widow, their mother, the wife of the deceased. So you could do this to pay, again, for her and for the daughters as well if they need to be supported. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, nechasim sheish l'macharayos, in other words, karka, motzin lebanos, min habanim. You could take out from the yisomim in order to feed the daughters among the sons. Rashi explains, l'mezonos u'l'farnasa. You could feed the daughters in order to give them food or to give them enough money to marry off. Also, the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar holds, levanos min habanos. You could give daughters among daughters. Rashi explains what that means is levanos min habanos, liktanos min hagdolos. You could give to the minors among the girls who are above age. Im ein sham elabanos. If the man died and left over only daughters. V'chziku gdolos b'nechasim, and the gdolos who are more capable took hold of the property. They took hold of the estate. Motzin miyadam v'cholkos b'sheva. You be forcibly take from them the property and divide them equally. V'hachalek mizone. Here there's no mizonos. She'ein banos nizonos min habanos. The feature kulan shavim b'yerusha. There's no issue of mizonos in this context. Basically, the gdolos, because they're older, they've taken control of the estate. Bezin steps in and says, wait a second, that's not fair. You are all equal banos here. Let's split up evenly. Everyone takes the Yerusha and goes home. As opposed to the case of when the banim bimakum banos, then banos get nothing. The ben gets the Yerusha and the daughters get nothing. But now the daughters are left with nothing. So in that case, we could forcibly take from the banim, from their property, and feed the banos. But when they're only daughters, there's no taking from anybody else. We're just dividing Yerusha equally, and then anyone's allowed to do whatever they want with the money that they receive. Then Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar goes further and says, again, we take from the banos from the banim, we take the banos from the banos, and then you take banim min habanim as well. Rashi explains that to mean l'ktanim min hagdolim l'chaluk b'shava. Also, if the father leaves over sons, it could be daughters there also, but if the father leaves over sons, so the gdolim are the ones who are going to take control of the estate. But that's not halakhically correct. everyone has to get equal portion, even the Ketanim. So if the Gedolim take the control, we step in and say, wait a second, let's divide everything equally. All children, all sons get equal rights to the Yerusha. And then the next case that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says is the fourth permutation is Ulevanim min habanos, you give the sons when in amongst the daughters. So what's that case? Rashi doesn't tell us that case here.
Maybe you have minor sons and you've got the Gedolim girls.
So you just take everything from the daughters.
מניחים את הנכסים תחת יד הבנים והם זנים את אחיותיהם ולימדנו כאן ולימדנו כאן התנה שאם תפסו הבנות הגדולות את הנכסים לצורך מזונותיהם מוצאים אותם מידם ומעמידים אותם ביד הבנים כיוון שהנכסים מרובים.
So that's the first case. We have to read a little bit further. So when do you give the bonos? So that's when the bonos are the gdolos and they've taken control. So we take from them in order to give to the sons in a situation where the Gemara says "Benichasim Rubim." But Aval, we'll explain this again. Aval lo libanim min habanos benichasim muatim. If there is very little nechasim, then we don't give the sons within the daughter. So let's read that Rashi and hopefully put everything together.
If there's only enough for mezonos, then you don't take out from the banos.
Right. So let's see the Rashi exactly. That's what Rashi says. Rashi explains aval lo libanim min habanos benichasim muatim when there's very little property. There's not enough to feed everyone to the age of bogeris, in which case when they're bogros, they'll, I guess, fend for themselves. But there's not enough money. If there's very little money, then we say better for the sons to go door to door asking for money than for the girls to go door to door asking for money. So when there's nechasim merubim, so then we give it all to the sons, and then the sons have to support their sisters. If there's very little, then we actually give the daughters, even though that's against the Yerusha policy, we give the daughters and make the sons go door to door.
It seems that this bride is mixing up situations, no? Because in most of the cases is that you're taking out from one to feed the others. But in Banim to Banim, it seems that they're doing a whole new Yerusha.
Yes, sometimes.
No.
It's not the same situation. Each of these four permutations, they're each different.
It looks like it's not a different. Yeah. Not the same case.
Right. Meaning the case of, let's see one second. No. I think they are actually
the case of the banim to banim. It seems to me that they're just taking everything from everyone and just from what explaining that they're just redistributing equally.
Right.
But all the others, they're just taking enough food for mezonos in the case of the banos.
Right, so I think, but the situation is the same. That each scenario is the same in that the older kids are taking control and the young kids are not.
Right.
So who are the older, who are the younger? If the older kids are boys and the younger ones are girls, so you take from them not Yerusha, you take from the boys to give mezonos to the girls.
Correct.
If the older ones are banim and the young ones are banim, then you take out to do Yerusha.
Right.
So the halacha is slightly different depending on the.
Meaning the case is the same, but the outcome is different.
Exactly, right. Depending on who the players are that we're talking about. Now, that's all in the world of Nechasim Sheyesh Lahem Hachraos with respect to Karka within the world of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is much more complex than Rebbe. Aval, says the Gemara, in contrast to the... Nechasim Sheyesh Lahem Hachraos, property that has no Hachraos, which is another way of saying Metaltim, Motzin lebanim min habanim, then you take out, so let's say the gedolim, the older sons, take control of it. So then you take it out from them in order to equally divide it to the younger sons as well. And lebanos min habanos, if there are only daughters left behind, and the older daughters are taking control, we take from them as well to evenly divide even to the younger daughters, because they all have equal rights. Ulebanim min habanos, and if the older sons have taken control, and the younger girls who have not gotten any control, even though Midiraisa, the daughters should have no Yerusha at all when their sons were left over, still nonetheless, we give the daughters of the property of the Metaltlin in order to be fed. Aval lo lebanos min habanim. But what we do not do is, if the sons have taken control of the Metaltlin, we do not take from the sons in order to give to the daughters, because they have no rights to it. And Alpha Gav the Kaimulan Halacha Kirabi, even though in Shvain. So that's the Machlokas. So very, very complex. A lot of, according to Rebbe, it's very clear. Rebbe says, regardless of Karka, regardless of Metaltlin, we take out from the sons in order to feed the wife and the widow and to feed the daughters. Very simple. You always take out from metalton, you take out from the karka. According to Rabbi Shimon, he split between karka and metalton. And within those worlds, they're pretty much the same, but there's one difference at the end. The only difference is that you always take from the older to make sure the younger ones are always getting fed or either getting a yusha. The one difference is if the banim have taken control, and then they're also banos, then if it's karka, you give banos to the karka. You give karka to the banos, depending whether it's merubim or mimuatim. But by metalton, you give nothing to the banos in the context of banim.
But it seems from here, at least from Rabbi Artscroll, that in the case of lebanim mina banos, that we give them nothing. And you don't give them
right. Banos mina banim, you give them nothing.
Right.
Banos within metalton.
No, banim mina banos.
Oh, I have here that banim mina banos, you give them. You give, because the banos have no shy.
Right, you give everything to the
banos. Exactly, the
banos.
Oh,
the banos keep nothing.
Right, oh, by the karka, we said differently. By the karka.
But the karka, so this is also different.
Here, it's not, you're right. So there are two differences. When they're only sons and when they're only daughters, then everything's the same within Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar.
Right.
When there's only son, when there's sons and daughters, depending who's older, who's younger, then there's going to be a distinction whether it be karka or whether it be metalton.
Right.
Okay, fine. I'm not going to go through it again. It's complex. It's here. Not complex. It's just a lot of information, a lot of details to remember. There are different permutations. End up being eight, right? Eight permutations. Because within karka and metalton, and then the four scenarios with each and each of them, so the eight different scenarios. So in the end of the day, the Gemara says, how do we paskin? Even though normally the Pesach is Gemara and Erevin, I think, here, but other places as well, that we pass like Rebbe against his Chaver. In this case, it should be Rebbe over Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. Hacha halacha k'Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. This is an exception. We pass in fact, like Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar. The Rava, because Rava says, Hilchasa mi mekarkai v'lo mi betatali bein l'ksuva bein l'mizone bein l'farnasa. As we said above, that Rava holds that we take from the karka to feed the women, but we do not take from the metalton. And according to Rebbe, he said there's no difference between mekarkar and metalton, but Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar said there is a difference between metalton and mekarkar, and therefore we pass in like Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar.
Which is the second opinion,
right? Okay, great. The Gemara now quotes from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Lo kasav la ksuva besula." Let's say you don't write a ksuva to the wife. So what's the halacha? So the halacha is besula govim asayim v'amana mana. So even though there's no ksuba, there's a still a self-understood obligation that the husband owes a basula 200 and an almana 100, because that's a tanai bezdin. So let's say kasav la sade shavimana tachas masayim zuz. So let's say he writes in the ksuba, this sade of mine, which is only worth 100, is going to be as a lien or as a point of collection for the 200 that one would owe a basula. Below kasav la, he does not write in the text of the ksuba, let's say he doesn't write, all my property is going, you're going to have a lien on all my property to pay up your ksuba if we get divorced. He doesn't write that. Still, nonetheless, he's chayv. Any property he has it has to be used to pay for the ksuba. Shu tanai bezin. This too is a tanai bezin. A person cannot remove himself from one of these tanai bezins. Even though he doesn't write it, it still is a requirement for him. Okay, then the Gemara says, the Mishnah rather says, Lo kasav la, he doesn't write in the ksuba. Some of the obligations he's supposed to write is im tishtabi afrakincha, or afrakinich, maybe, bosvinech li leinaso. If you get captured, I have to redeem you and place you back as my wife in my house, if he doesn't write that. Or for a kohenes in this case, sometimes where kohenes means a kohenes, there's a bas kohen, sometimes kohenes means an ashes kohen. Here kohenes means an ashes kohen. So if she's an ashes kohen, Hajrincha l'midina seich. He doesn't write that the ksuba of a kohenis is actually somewhat different. Of an ashes kohen, not a bas kohen, but an ashes kohen. A girl marrying a kohen is different because when you redeem her, we assume that she's anusa. And if she's anusa, she's also to go back to the kohen. But he still has an obligation to redeem his wife, even though he has to divorce her when he redeems her, he has to still redeem her and send her back to the house of her father. So if you don't write either of these languages, whether it be for a Eishes Yisrael or an Eishes Kohen, still the halacha is, chayiv, you have an obligation to redeem her anyways, shehu, tanai bezdin, this too is an obligation that bezdin requires one to pay. Okay, then the Gemara says that, the Mishnah says rather, nishves, let's say she becomes held, she's taken away and held in captivity. Chayiv of doso, He has to redeem her, like we just said. That's one of the obligations that a husband has to his wife. Im amar hare gito uksuvasa b'ftivte es atmo. Nice husband, he says, here's your get. Here's your ksuba, go help yourself. So then the halacha is, ein rashai, he has no right to do that because he already is obligated. Rashi says, shekvar nischai b'pidyono mishinishbeis. It already existed. Once she held, once she became held in captivity, there's an automatic chiv, and he cannot remove himself from that chiv.
In the meantime, she lost weight. She became friendly with the captors, and it was like a very funny movie. Like 20 years ago, it was very, very funny. So see that? It's
I'm familiar with the movie of Twins, Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
But I'm such a picky of movies.
Movie. Like, you know, when they told him that they never, he just took a champagne bottle and started.
He wasn't too good looking himself, Danny DeVito. Okay, so the Mishnah says. Then further, what Mishnah said, let's say Luxa. Let's say she's afflicted with some type of disease, Rachmana Litzlan, an illness. Chayv l'rifoso. He has an obligation also to support her, to help with medical bills. And Rashi explains the reason for this is Chayv l'rifoso, sherfua kimizonos. Just like his obligation to feed her, giving refuah is also a physical sustenance. That's Rashi's take. I believe Yishonim argue. Other Yishonim say this is different. There's a different Mechayv here. Let me just look for a second. Yeah, the Ritva argues on this. Yeah, it's not necessarily because of mizonos. But what does Ritva say? It doesn't tell me, though. The Ritva thought it was just simply a takana b'fnei atmo with no kesher at all to mizonos, and the reason is she has to serve him. That's amazing. She has to have the ability to serve him. If she's sick, she can't serve him, so he has to support her and make her healthy so that she could better support him. Fascinating. Okay, so the nafkaminas the Achronim point out are, let's say she says that there's no obligation, I don't want you to be mizanami, I don't want you to be in a nizonas, fe no osa. That's Gemara talks a number of times. She's allowed to opt out of that takana for her benefit. If she opts out, so then he has an obligation to help with the medical bills. But if it's midin of her having the ability just to serve him in general, then he would still be obligated to be mirafa her. Okay. They talk about here different situations. Let's say it's a refuah that's endless. It's a refuah that's going to be a lifelong battle. Is he obligated to help with the medical bills in such a case?
Here it says that the difference between shvuya and refuah is that refuah, that the shvuya, the chiyuv to be poda her, it chal immediately when she's a shvuya. But the refuah chals every day a little bit. So today, let's say he did his, then he can megarish her because...
Oh, interesting. Well, we didn't get that line of the Mishnah, but that would, I guess, explain the very next line, that he could just tell her, right, you're on your own. Okay. But in terms of the chiv refuah, that either comes from the chiv mizonos, or because the chiv that she has to serve him, so she has to be in a healthy state to serve him. Mm-hmm. So then, after explaining that, the Mishnah says, Amar, let's say the husband decides to say, Hare Gita Ksubasa, here's your get, here's your ksuba, Tirape Zatma, go help yourself. Rashai, one is permitted to do that. And Rashi explains, Rashai she'ein adam chayv lazon grushasa. He's not obligated to feed his grusha. And the alumnus you're saying is that, I guess the Achronim point out, is that he is the chayv refuah doesn't say in the beginning she's sick, you need to get her till she's completely healthy.
Right.
For that day, you have to pay whatever the medical costs are for that day. If you pay your daily costs, you can divorce her that day, and then you're off the hook. Okay. So the Gemara says now, money. Who authored our Mishnah? It must be Rabbi Meir. Damar kol poches lebesulim imesai mulaman namimena hareza bilaznus. So it must be Rabbi Meir who holds anybody who lessens the amount of money that's supposed to go to Basula, less than 200, less than 100 different amana, that is not considered a good marriage, and it's a bilaznus. Because the Rabbi Yehuda, if Rabbi Yehuda authored our Mishnah, ha'amar ratza kosev lebesula shtashim asayim, v'hi kosev esis kabalti mimcha. Mana. A person could write to his wife, to a Masula, here's 200, and she could write back, even though she never received it, I accepted 100, meaning I'm being mochel on 100, so he could lessen the amount to really only 100. And for, so to Ulal Mana Mana Vihil Koseves, his Kabalti Mimcha Chamishim Zuz, he could write a ksub of 100 to the Mana, and she could write, I'm accepting, I'm being mochel 50. So we see from here that our mission says we don't tolerate that. You cannot less make any less than 200 or 100. Rabbi Huda allowed one to have less than 200 or 100 respectively. So it must be that Rabbi Meir is the author of the Mishnah, and therefore even if one doesn't mention the amount of money in the Ksuba, it's assumed that it's going to be 100 and 200 respectively.
It seems that Rabbi Huda is a little bit different because he's not saying that he can just give her 50 and 150. He's just saying he can give her 200 and she can then return the 100 or be mochel on the 100.
Right. So I guess the question would be, why within Rabbi Huda, why couldn't you simply say, okay, Almana, Basula,
yeah,
100?
So it seems that he holds a little bit like Rabbi Meir. It's just that he finds a way out.
So what would the need be for that? If the end of the day, all you really owe the Basula is 100, so why would he say to do that, to write 200 and then say, I accepted 100 already?
Right, it seems that he might also agree that it's a big...
But what would the Svar be? No, but what would the Svar be? If he holds, you really only have to pay her 100 in the end of the day.
No, I guess maybe Rabbi Huda is trying to get off the hook from Beis Din, saying if Beis Din is going to say, listen, you know what, we're mechayev you anyways 200, so the only way out from this maybe is that he gives her 200 and then she's mechayev on 100 or something. Otherwise Beis Din could still force him to pay 200 maybe.
Right, I think apparently the Rishonim asked your type of question. Maybe Rabbi Huda authored a Mishnah, and the Mishnah was a situation that she was never mochel,
right.
But if she would be mochel, so apparently they point this out in Rashi.
Rashi seems to anticipate that. He says, because the Mishnah said it like unequivocally.
Across the board that. So look at Rashi.
It's mashm, even if she's mochel.
So let's look at Rashi say that. Rashi says, he kosevas his kabalti. Lashon Shovar, a receipt that I received the money, even though she didn't. Afi lo niskapli, even though she didn't, she could still write off 100. Uli Rabbi Meir, eini yicholo limchol ba'od detachta, but Rabbi Meir doesn't allow for any bechila. Umas nisa nami dikasani lo kasev lo ksuba, gova ksuba asa shlema, kasai kadaitach, v'afi lo machla. Even if she is mochel, it sounds like she always has to receive 200. It's not about writing 200 and then saying I'm be mochel 100. She always needs to receive 200. That's the implication of the mission according to Rashi. Other Achar Rishonim have a problem with this Rashi. It doesn't sound that way anywhere at all. So they have a different approach to it, but we'll go with Rashi for now. So the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. The problem is, Ema Seifa, look at the end of the Mishnah where it says, Kasev lo sada shaveh amon natachas masayim zuz. If he writes, okay, this sada is going to be your point of collection of your ksuba, which is only worth 100 though. Lo kasev la kov nechazim disli achrayin lo ksuba seich. And he doesn't write, oh, my other property is also going to have a lien to pay for your ksuba. Still, the Mishnah said, Chayev shu tanai bezin, you still have to pay from all the property. There's a lien on all the property that he has. So that line of the Mishnah, also in the Rabbi Yehuda, that goes according to Rabbi Yehuda, how? Damer achrayos tal soferhu. So the din is, it's complicated, not that complicated, but the Gemara is about to see the first parak of the end. They're very, very complex there. So one of the machlokisim are, if a person never writes achrayos, that I owe you, if I don't pay you the money, you have a lien on all my property. So do we view that as a tell sofer? It should have been there, and the sofer just left it out, but it's understood that that's the way it works. You have achrayos, or no, one could intentionally leave off achrayos and actually have no responsibility. So the Mishnah which paskins that if you don't write achrayos, there still is achrayos. The fact that achrayos was left at the ksuba was a tell sofer, that goes according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Is there anybody who doesn't hold that?
Yeah, because the Rabbi Meir, Hamar achrayos, love tell sofer. He holds that no. It's not a mistake. A person can intentionally leave off the responsibility, the achrayos, and doesn't have to pay up.
Even, and that wouldn't be a tnai bezdin.
That would not be. Well, we'll see. Maybe this case might be different. Ksuba might be different than in general.
He's talking in general.
In general, by a shtar. Person sells a car. Here's a land. By the way, but if someone takes it away, my creditor takes it from you, I'm not responsible to pay for you. Yehuda says, "What do you mean? It's a tall suffer. Of course, you have to pay achrayos, even though you didn't write achrayos."
His case is, he doesn't say that. He just doesn't say anything.
Exactly. I just write you, I sell you my property, and I don't tell you, you don't do a title insurance, you don't do a whole search. It turns out the bank owns my house, and they take it from you.
Right.
If I don't write a chraos that I owe you the money that you were taking away, according to Yehuda, I have to pay you back anyways because it was a tell sofer. There's always a chraos when selling property.
So the halacha is that when you write the shtar, to have a chraos, it has to say that, according to... to Rabbi Yehuda would have to say.
No, Rabbi Yehuda.
No, Tausaf, according to Rabbi Meir.
It would have to say.
It would have to say.
Exactly.
It doesn't say, I'm selling you this and whatever left I have, it's an achrayus to this.
Exactly. I cheated you in a deal, and it wasn't a mistake. I intentionally did that. I have every right to do that. So that line of the Mishnah that says, if you don't write all my property, that I have achrayus to pay you the ksuba from all my property, it's there anyways, you still have that achrayus. That's only according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that achrayus left off is a tel sofer, but it was still meant to be there. So the beginning of the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, but the end of the Mishnah, or the middle of the Mishnah, is Rabbi Yehuda. So where do you see the machlokes about achrayus being a tel sofer or not? So the last line of the Amud Aleph, quote from the Mishnah in Bava Metzia, who did Tanan, right, did I read that again? De'i Rabbi Meir here again, Amar achrayus lav tel sofer who, did Tanan, the Mishnah tells us, Matza shtari chov. Let's say you find in the street some documents that so-and-so owes money to somebody else. Im yesh bahen achraus nechasim. Let's say the loan agreement says that Reuven owes Shimon money, and if Reuven doesn't pay the money, he has a responsibility to shibud on his nechasim. There's a lien on his house to pay back the bank. So if it has achraus on it, lo yachzir, we don't return it to the malvin lover. We do not return it to the parties. Because since there's a chrayos on it now, Bezin's going to go do whatever they need to get the property of Reuven to make sure Reuven pays Shimon. And it's possible what happened in reality was maybe Reuven really paid Shimon. But over the course of time, Reuven or Shimon dropped the shtar and it never got the stamp of void. And Bezin's going to say, oh, wait a second, this is a good document, there's a chrayos, let's collect money from Reuven. So because of that concern, you don't return such a shtar that has this chrayos on it. But if ein behem achrayus, if there is no achrayus on it, on ein behem achrayus nechasim, then yachzer, then you can return to the parties. Shein bezin ifron behem divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that bezin will not collect from the property if there's no achrayus on it. They won't get involved because since achrayus is written on it. So we see from there that even though if achrayus was left off, it's still an effective shtar. We don't assume that achrayus was a mistake. It was left off willingly. Right.
So the reason why you don't give back to the malve is because you're concerned in the case of the Christ that the love and the malve got together, and they conspired to take away the sade from other.
Right. It's called kanunya. The Gemara says right. It says exactly. So they said if there's a chrayal, so the malve and love got together. Let's drop this document. Someone will find it, and then. They're going to collect from me. I don't have any money. So they'll collect from the other guy who I've sold the property to.
Let's say I sold you a field. Then I go to Adam and I say, you know, Adam, let's get together. Let's create a Malvin Lover previous. And then we go ahead and he says, oh, you know what? I have to take it back from you.
Right. And then I lose out. I lose my property that I paid for. So because of that, if it has a chraus, you can't return it. Sorry, if it has a chraus, you don't return it because Bezin's going to act based on this shtar of achrayus and take from me.
What would it stop us to do it anyways?
What would stop?
But in this case, it's lost and we don't return it. Why would it stop? How could you stop from somebody else doing it? It has to be registered in Beis Din.
I think the shtar was a valid shtar and was paid off properly. But after the fact of being validated, they wanted to try to go ahead and take out from the guy from me who I bought the property from you. I remember these cases in Bava Metzia being a little bit very confusing, actually. But we see from here that Rabbi Meir says that if it doesn't write achrayos, we don't assume achrayos was meant to be there. It's not a tel sofer. A person can intentionally leave off achrayos. But according to the Chachamim Omrim, says the Gemara, according from the Mishnah Bava Metzia, Chachamim Omrim, echad zeh lo yachzir shebezin nifram mehen. Even whether it has achrayos, whether it does not have achrayos, you do not return to Bezin because you do not return it because Bezin will pay from it. They'll collect from it because even if it doesn't write a chrayos, we assume it's a mistake. It's a tel sofer and it meant to write a chrayos and Bezin will act upon that. So Chachamim are in line with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So either way, we see from here that Rabbi Yehuda thinks a chrayos is tel sofer. He goes according to the end of the Mishnah, our Mishnah here, that if a person does not, when he writes his ksuba, he doesn't say that there's a lien on all my properties. It's still assumed that there is a lien on all the properties. That's Rabbi Yehuda who holds that this is a tel sofer. But at the beginning of the Mishnah, we said it's really Rabbi Meir who holds that there always needs to be 200 for Basula and 100 for Almana across the board, and Mechila doesn't work. So there's a steer who authored our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Reisha Rabbi Meir, Sefer Rabbi Yehuda. So is that an answer or a question? Sometimes we say it as a question, sometimes we say it as an answer. Sounds like still part of the question. Reisha Rabbi Meir, Sefer Rabbi Yehuda, we're going to say it's two different people who authored the Mishnah. V'chi tema kula Rabbi Meir, he maybe really is all Rabbi Meir, he authored the entire thing. V'shani la, lay the Rabbi Meir, ben k'suva l'shtar. Maybe the world of Sharos, the world of Ksuba, are completely different. They're different sets of rules. That when it comes to regular Sharos, Rabbi Meir thinks that it is not a telesofer. A person may intentionally leave off Achraos on a Shtar. When it comes to Ksuba, a person may not leave off the Achraos intentionally, and if he does, it's considered a telesofer and it's meant to be there. Maybe one would want to make such a distinction.
It's part of the Chiyuv Beis then.
Exactly. So maybe that's a distinction we can make, and Rabbi Meir authored our entire Mishnah, and it's not a stira to Rabbi Meir's opinion in Baba Metzia by other Sharos. Well, this is a fascinating topic. I never actually learned this topic in depth, but the halacha of the shtar in general, how it matches up with the halachas of a ksuba, and how it matches up with the halachas of a gittin, how much overlap or how different they are. This just is one distinction. It's a fleeting thought, but it's going to be rejected pretty quickly. But we see, at least in the Habmi, there's a distinction between the way the Ksuba's halachas are and whether how a Shtar's halachas are. Meaning one could just simply suggest it's a Ksuba, a Shtar. It's a regular Shtar just between husband and wife, but it's no different than a Shtar between a Malv and a Lov. It's a very monetary-based document. Or no, Ksuba has a different set of rules because it's more about Ishus and Shtar's is more about Mammonus. So that's the distinction the Gemara suggests at first. Well, I said, wait a second. Umi Shani Le, does Rabbi Meir really hold of a difference between a Shtar and a Ksuba? Hatana, doesn't the Braisa teach us that Chamisha Govin Min Amuchrorin? There are five cases where we collect from the Muchrorin. Usually the word is used is Mishuchrorin. But the property that's free, that's there's no lien on it, that Rashi explains, Min Amuchrorin, Im Yesh Nechasim B'nei Chorin, Eitzel HaChayiv Nigvan, Vim Lav Ein Nigvan Min Amishubadim. So let's say I owe money, I'm the one who's Chayiv. So then you can only collect from any available property that's still in my possession. Any property that I already sold, then you cannot collect from any of those types of properties. So who are these five? What are these five cases? So the Gemara lists them. Elohein, Peros, Vishvach Peros. So what are these cases? Rashi explained, let me read through the Rashi here. Peros, Vishvach Peros. K'detanam, Maseches, Gittin, Daf, Memches. Ein motzin l'achilas Peros, u'lishvach karkaros, minichasim, mishubadim, nipnei tikin olam. So, Ubishashim Ochsin Batalis, Mefarish Lachilis Paris Lashach Kakaos Ketzad. What's the case? What do you mean? Harishigazal Sada Mechaveh. Ruvain steals a field, and then Ruvain goes ahead and Machalach, and Ruvain sells it to Shimon now. Vishpicha, and Shimon made it very nice, made a beautiful garden. Varehi Yotzim Bedin Betachas Yatalokeach. Now, the Nigzal, Levi, let's call him, goes and says, wait a second, that's my property that was stolen and sold over to you. So he goes ahead and takes it away from the Lokeach. With all the wonderful improvements that he made, bezevel with the fertilization, benir and the plowing, bimperos sheban, all the fruit that grew nicely, shehanigzal torfo mimeno, that was taken away from him. Ukshichose al mocher. So now the lokeach, who thought he rightfully bought the property, he goes back to the gazlan, who's the mocher also. Shemachalo b'achraos, he sold it with achraos. Gove kerem nichasim mishubadim. There the Lokeach has the right to collect from the Gazlan's Mishubadim. That the Gazlan sold other properties, the Lokeach could go collect from them because it was
only the Karen of the Paris.
Exactly. Only the Karen, but Shvach, but when he wants to collect all the improvements that he made, he collects only from the Nechasim B'nei Chorin of the Gazlan, Vlo Menei Mishubadim, not properties that Gazlan already sold off. B'nei Tikin Olam, because Tikin Olam, it's not fair that I bought a property from the Gazlan. I had no idea that he had a lien. This guy, he stole the property and sold it over. So that we don't collect, when it comes to the Peros and the Shvach Peros, we only collect from the Bnei Chorin, not from the Mishubadim. Furthermore, the Gemara quotes, HaMekaba Alav Lazun as Ben Ishto. A guy marries a woman who already has children from a previous marriage, and he takes upon himself to feed her children.
So what's the difference between Peros and Shvach Peros?
So, peros are the actual fruit. I think shvach peros is just simply the shvach kark. I'm not sure why it's called shvach peros.
One of them is that he actually it seems that he actually planted and did everything. And the other one is that he did shvach.
Exactly. He did for the ground, for the property.
Yeah.
You know it's called shvach peros. And the Gemara really means shvach, as Adam said, karka. Right.
Okay.
The third scenario that you collect only from the B'nai Charin is ha-makaba alav lazunas ben ishto. A person who takes upon himself to feed his stepchildren. He marries a woman, and the woman has, again, children from a previous marriage. He takes on the responsibility. So here, too, also, we only collect from the B'nai Charin and not from Mishubadim. Now, Rashi tells us the reason for these halachas, by the way, are because l'fisha einam k'suvim, there's no set amount for these. These things could be endless. So we therefore limited from where they could collect from. And again, makabel lav lazun es ben ishto ubas ishto, either the son, his stepson, or a stepdaughter. V'get chov she'en bo achrayos. And a get chov, get oftentimes is really a shtar. Rashi tells us get chov kol sharos nikrin get. Somehow over time, get turned into what we call get. But a get is really just another word for shtar. So if a shtar chov, she'en bo achrayos, that has no achrayos on them, that too can only be collected from B'nai Chorin, but cannot be collected from Mishubadim. Because it's not fair to me. Let's say I buy a property from Reuven. Turns out Reuven owes money to somebody else. And there's no achrayos on this. So I had no idea that that Shimon's going to, if he doesn't collect from Reuven, he's going to collect my property that there's a lien on. It's not fair to me. So there's no achrayos, he can't collect from Mishubadim. If there was achrayos, then I should have done the responsibility. I should have done the title search and find out what liens existed on this property. I bought it anyways, then I'm at fault. But if there's no achrayos, there's no way for me to know that.
It's not a real get, it's just a regular star.
Exactly, regular shtar. Get here means shtar. According to Rabbi Meir, who holds that exact achrayos can be left off the list, right? Then further, the Gemara lists ksubas isha, she'ein ba'achrayos. Also, ksubas isha, that has no achrayos, so that too can only be collected from B'nai Charon, not from Mishubadim. So who holds, as Adam said, man shmasle de'omar achrayos lav tosofer? That's not a mistake that one can intentionally leave off the word achrayos. That is Rabbi Meir. So it's Rabbi Meir. And yet it's Katani Ksubas Isha. So in the same list, we have Ksubas Isha and Getchov, Sharchov. There is no distinction between Shtar and Ksuba, at least in the world of Achraos. They're both equal. So you can't make such a distinction. So who, again, authored our Mishnah? That's the question. So the Gemara says, Ibais Eima, Rabbi Meir, Ibais Eima, Rabbi Yehuda. I could fit in either one of them. Ibais Eima, Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda holds that Achraos is a Tau Sofer, and therefore one can intentionally leave it off the list. And also Yehuda, who holds that you can be mochel on the 200 and 100 amounts. So Yehuda hasam, kasur lei hiskabalti, hachalo kasur lei hiskabalti. This is exactly what you suggested. That Yehuda holds that it always has to be, the ksuba always has to have 200 in that. You cannot write less than 200. She can always write later on, yes, I accepted 100 of it. But it has to be have a starting point as 200. So therefore Yehuda also could have authored a mishnah like you had suggested. Ibai Seima. Or alternatively, it could be Rabbi Meir, my chayv de katani mina mechurarin. What does it mean when it says chayv? When it says chayv in the Mishnah, it means that you're chayv to pay from the B'nai Chorin, not from the Mishubadim. Yes, Rabbi Meir holds you're allowed to leave the word achrayos off, both by a shtar and by a ksuba. So if you're allowed to leave off the word achrayos, and I write my ksuba, I don't have to, there's no lien on my property. So why do I have to pay for my other property? It means you have to pay from your B'nai Chorin. But you're not allowed to go from the Mishubadim because one may intentionally leave off the word Achrayos.
So what does it mean, Shehut Tanayim Bezden?
You're saying that's it's self-understood. Meaning you don't need Tanayim Bezden, that's in general, by all Sharos. Uh-huh. Great question. See if anyone addresses this in the back. Ah, the Marsha asks this question. So the Karni Re'eim apparently suggests the lashon of Tanai Bezdin only is with respect to the Almana, but with respect to the Ksuba of Aisha Regila, you don't need a Tanai Bezdin. Now, I'm not sure why Almana requires Tanai Bezdin, as opposed to the Stam Isha. Okay, there's another. I'm not sure. They quote another sefer back
it's
here.
An almana we said because we said a ksuva maybe midaraisa according by a basula, but by an almana the whole thing is like a rabbinic.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
So, but you didn't write that she gets it at all. You know, where you didn't say she gets it, the fact she should get it.
Maybe. Okay. Very good. Okay. Shkarach. Okay. The Gemara now says, quote from the Mishnah: Lo kasev lavachule. So let's say he didn't write. He left out from the Mishnah, from the Ksuba rather, that he's not going to redeem her if she gets held in captivity. So the Gemara discusses as follows. Amar Abu the Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, said, Aishis Yisrael Shenenza, Asur Labaila, Chashin and Shema Tchilasa Beones, Visofa Beratzum. She's Asur to her husband, even though normally a woman who's Anusa, who's raped, is Motut to stay married to her husband who's Yisrael, we're still, Abu the Shmuel Asur her. We thought maybe she started off be'ones, but besof, it was be'ratzon, and it was be'ratzon, then she would even be aser, be eshes ish, she was aser to her husband, would be aser even for the for Yisrael. So look at Tosas. Tosas writes, asur le'baila, ein hakshos me'ester, the hishar le'mordechai, the Gemara Megill tells us she was with Achashverosh, and so shouldn't we be concerned that why she wanted to be with stay with Mordechai? It should be sofa, says Tosfos, Titzadekes Gemur Haisa. No, even her sofa was also Be'ones. That's what Tosfos explains. Okay, now, the interesting machlokes achronim here. How are we going to understand this changing of Tchilasa Be'ones and sofa Beratzum? So Pneshu explains the reason for the Isser is that in the end of the day, that even though the mice itself is considered an ones mice, since it was b'tchilasa was ones, but since her ratzon is viewed as an independent entity, the mice is still viewed as mice ones, but once she has ratzon, that ratzon makes it into she's usher. She's usher meaning the ratzon, not meaning the mice. It's the ratzon that makes her usher, not the mice. But the mice is still defined as a mice anus, but once she has ratzon, that ratzon ushers her. The Beis Yaakov, of course, from the back of the Sefer, the Beis Yaakov explains differently that he says, no, that even the Maisa turns into a Maisa Ratzon. Once it's Ratzon, the Maisa is now defined as a Maisa Ratzon also. And it's a Maisa Ratzon that Aser, not simply Ratzon independent of. And the most intriguing one, which is very important, whenever it comes to Eishes this, you always have to raise this point. Tosin, in the beginning, Subas points this out, that no, it was done by Onus, and there was no, even there's no Ratzon at all, either side, there's Ratzon, but the Ratzon doesn't turn around the Maisa. And it's not the Ratzon that asks her. It's the Mal Mal Ba. The fact that she betrayed him. Not that Ratzon. She was with another man. It's Mal Mal Ba. That's the Tosin in the beginning quotes. The pasuk that's found in Parshas Nasa in the context of Sota. It's the fact that she betrayed him. So you have to figure out what that means exactly. So the big nafkamin is, let's say they talk about this in the Achronim. Certainly wouldn't be, no one permits this. But let's say he would permit her to be with another husband. So it wouldn't be considered betrayal. There would be ratzon, but it wouldn't be considered betrayal there. So according to a few things, the Hafla, who thinks it's all about mal mal, so then she would be mutter if he allowed his wife to be with another man.
We learned before, however, that, because here it seems the case that he only had the once, but we learned before that she was kidnapped by a group of people, and that they're very shrich, that happens often, that we learned that she might be willing even from the beginning.
Yeah.
I think we learned it a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah, could be. I should have better memory. But here's the situation. We're assuming it was tchilas ba'ones and sofa beratzon. That's according to Avuah d'Shmuel. The Gemara asks, Eisivei Rav asks Avuah d'Shmuel, Im tishtabi afrakinech vosvinich li leinaso. So what do you mean? The clear Mishnah tells us that you're allowed to redeem her from captivity and you're allowed to stay married to her. So we do not assume that sofa beratzon. So Avu d'Shmuel was ishtik. He was quiet. So Kari Rav led Avu d'Shmuel. Rav referred to the father of Shmuel. Remember, Rav and Shmuel were contemporaries. Apparently, Avu also was. But he spoke back to Shmuel's father. Sarim atzu b'milim v'kafi simul p'im. So the sarim, the ministers, the rabbis, I guess, their words stopped and they put their hand or a spoon, their palm or the spoon, over their mouth. So, meaning he stopped talking, but there's something he could have said. He stopped the words from coming out. He should have spoken a little further. What could he have suggested? He could have easily answered, Bishvui Hakilo. No, Shvui is different. in general, when it comes to someone who's simply nansa raped in a regular case, so there's sovel barasum. When a woman's held bishvui as a captivity, so then it's a different story. Then we have special kulas we build in, even though maybe it would have been baratzon b'sof, we still are very make when it comes to shvui. Shvui is different than a stama case of nansa. Okay, so now the Gemara says.
Meaning that he could have said that they actually were aiding that she nivala. I think that's what it means.
But the case of Shuya.
But in the general cases that we have no,
and she's no Adam, she could say to herself, no one saw me, so she may as well have Ratzon,
right.
And therefore it would be Aser.
Yeah.
Okay. And Rashi says that line, I think, also. So the Gemara quotes now, according to Lavud Shmuel, who holds that even by the case of Shvuya, sorry, even by the case of Nensa, both cases, he's Aser. That she's Aser, whether it's Nenas or whether it's Shvuya, onus to shayir achmana heich mishkachasa. So give me, what's an example that you have a woman who's nansa, yet she's still permitted to her husband, if we assume everyone's lava sofer beratzam? The answer to the Gemara could go into Kamri Edom. The Edom witnessed this, and they said that shetzavcha mitchila vatsof, that she's busy screaming during the entire maisa, she screamed from beginning to end, and that's how we know that it was done even by in the end. So I'm trying to open the door, huh? Upliga the Rava, and Rava argues, Amar Rava, kol shetchilas ba'onis v'sof b'ratzon, afil hi omeres hanicholi. So Rava argues, as long as the beginning is ba'onis, even if the end's b'ratzon, even if she says, leave him alone, shomali niskak lei, hi secharta, had she not forced me, she would have hired him, muteres, she's still mutter. He takes another extreme, even though she says b'ratzon, she said I would do this willingly now, still, he thinks, as long as tchilaso is ba'onis, she'll be mutter to her husband. My taima, why? Yetzer alva alafsha. She was overtaken by her yetzer hara, which is a fascinating topic. Achram talk about when we apply this, when we don't apply this. So by the comes to this case, we say she was overtaken by the yetzer hara and therefore mutter. The Shitluk Betzes points out that when it comes to behema, let's say a behema and a woman, so or a man even, so there it was, let's say tchilas beonus, and then somehow the onus stops and then it's done beratzon. We don't assume that was yavsha, yatsa, yalavsha. There's certain things that the yetzahara for, certain things that there's no yetzahara for. A behemoth is an example that we cannot apply this far. If the person is still involved in that, even sofo, he says baratzon, then we say that's baratzon, and she would be usher to her husband. When it comes to a man and a woman, then already we say the yetzahara alavsha. Tani kavasa the Rava, there's a bryson that supports Rava, says what? Vihi lo nitzpasa, asur, if she wasn't forced into it, she wasn't grabbed, it wasn't rape, it was done willingly, then she's usher to her husband. If she was raped, then muteris, and she's permitted to stay married to her husband, because there's anusa. V'yeshcha, the bride says, v'yeshcha acheres, there's another situation, sh'afa pishalo nitpasa, even though she wasn't forced, she's still muteris, she's still muteris to her husband, even though it wasn't forced. V'yeshzu, what's that case? Kol shetchilasa bonus, v'sofer barasam. As long as the beginning was bonus, even though the end was no longer nitpasa, it was already in agreement, we still view this as being bonus, which supports it in Rava. There's yet another brisa that says v'hilo nitpasa asura, if she wasn't forced, she's asur, meaning she did it willingly, she's asur. Ha nitpasa, if she was forced, it would be mutaris, she'd be mutter to her husband. V'yesh chalcheres, there's another example, sh'af apisha nitpasa, even though she was forced, it's still going to be asur, she'll still be asur to her husband. V'ezezu, who is that? An ashes kohen, a woman married to a kohen who's anusa, she will be asur to her husband. So a different brisa. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Yishmael V'hi Lo Nitpasa Asur. If she wasn't forced, if she did it willingly, she'd be Asur. Ha Nitpasa Mutaris. If she did this forced, if she was forced into it, she'd be Mutar. V'yesh Chacharis. There's yet another example that Sha'af Apichel Lo Nitpasa. Even though she wasn't forced, she's still Mutaris. When is that? Ezezu Zu She Kidusha Kidushe Taos, where the Kidushin initially was done by mistake. Rashi explains the top wide line, Kedushe Taos, Al Tanai. Velonis Kaima Tanai, there was a Kedushin based on a certain Tanai. The Tanai was never fulfilled. Im Zinta Tachta Mutaris Lo, she's permitted to him. Lefisha Eino Isho El Pnuya Ba'almohi. Because she would just stamma Pnuya, because if they got married on Tanai and the Tanai was never kept, So she's still single, and she was, even though she was with another man, she's not asr because there was never a marriage in the first place. Shafilu, says the Gemara, b'na murkav aksefa mima'enes v'olechazla. Even if her son is riding on her shoulders, she can always refuse and opt out and go off on the, along the way. What's that? Kedushe talos, the last line? If it's kedushe talos, then she has a child from the initial kedushin that was done by talos. She could just walk away since there was a talos. Yeah. Yeah, that's the case. That it was done by kedushe talos. So, and she was with another man, since the Tanai was never met, the fact that she was with another man will not aser to her husband because she was never married to him. And even to go so far, let's say she was married to this man on Tanai, and they had a child with each other, yeah.
So the first case is that there is Kedusha Taos, mm-hmm. and she's with a man, and then they decide to get married. They can get married afterwards.
Let's say she marries Reuven, al Kedusha al Tanai. Tanai was never met. It was still outstanding.
Right.
And then while in that marriage, she's with another man.
And then he does the Tanai.
And then the Tanai never happens.
No, but then there's no problem.
Well, that's the Gemara saying. The Gemara, even though they were married...
But let's say the Tanai have to happen.
So then there would be a problem. Then they were married.
I think...
Yeah, Rashi says only a case where the Tanai was ever met. If the Tanai was met...
It's the Gozle Mafreya.
Then they were always married. They're married now. The only way the marriage would be undone if the Tanai is ever met. But if the Tanai is kept, so then the Kedushin was already Chal when they got married.
Right. So let's say they get divorced without the Tanai, and then can he marry her again after the Tanai?
If the Tanai is kept, so then they're considered a Grusha. So they can marry if she didn't marry anybody else in the middle, or if she's not a Kohen.
And this would not be considered... The Zinta wouldn't be considered in the middle.
Because
the Tanai never happened.
Right. If the Tanai never happened, so then they were never married, and Zinus won't affect their relationship.
Right.
So this only affects the relationship if they're married. And even if they had a son or child from that first Kedushin, since that Kedushin was Betos, so then that wouldn't make a difference anyways. Right. She could go marry that husband. Okay, then the Gemara says we have a few minutes left. Amar Rav Yehuda, Hani Nashi de Ganve Ganve, Sharin Le Guvrayu. These women who were stolen by these listim, these bandits, are permitted to their husbands. So Rashi explained because they were ba'ones. They were taken by force. So Amri Le Rabbanan Rav Yehuda, Rabbanan say back to Rav Yehuda, V'ha kam imamtin lehu, aren't these women serving their captors and they're bringing bread to them? Mach wazir, they're scared. That's why they're serving them. Not because they love them, they're doing this beratzon. They're scared. V'ha kam mishalchin le gire, aren't they sending them... What? Gire, isn't that? Rashi says arrows, but what does that mean?
They prepare their, when these guys are going to war, they're preparing
their
weapons.
Aha, okay, fine. It's actually like, which I thought was a terrible tragedy when I went to Israel and the army bases. So at the shooting range, they have each of the men shooting. There's a woman who is the one who's their trainer. Why? Because they want to impress the trainer. So they're trying to do really good so that their girlfriend next to them is supporting them and like massaging them. You're doing a great job. So the same idea here also, that the woman would get the guns and the weapons already to build them up and give them the ego boost that the men need. So we see from here, so Vahaka, Mishalchen, Legir, aren't they preparing all their weaponry? Machmazir, only because they're scared of them, but not because they love them. So Vade Shafkinu, Vazli, Minashain Asrim. But let's say they would be willing to stay. Rashi explains four wide lines down. Vada ishavkinu ganavim lelecha. So let's say the ganavim say you could go back home to Balaam. V'inin, and they, azlin, minashai ganavim asirin. And they willingly go back to the ganavim. That tells us that they did this willingly baraton, and they in fact would be asir. A few more lines. Tanu rabbanam. Shivuya malchus harehin kishvuin gnuvei listos. Kishvuin. If they were held captive by the malchus, they're considered shvuin. But Gnuvei Listos, if they're taken by bandits, Einam Kishvuin, they do not have the din of Shvuin. So Shvuin, we said, were more makeup by Shvuin, that they're mutter to go back to their husband.
This is what we learned, I think we mentioned this before.
That could be. This wasn't quoted, but maybe something like this was quoted.
Something like this.
But when they're captured by the Malchus, they have a din of Shvuin, which means they're allowed to go back to marry their Yisrael, their husband who's Yisrael. If they're captured by Listen, then we assume that maybe some of that relationship was built there, and maybe it was done by Ratzon, they would be usher to go back to their husband. And Mara says, Hatani Ipcha. We have a Bryce that says the complete opposite, that Malchus is considered usher to the husband, and Ganavim is mutter to the husband. Mara says, Malchus HaMalchus Lokashi, there's not a steer between different types of governments. Haba Malchus Achash Verosh, Haba Malchus Ben Natsar. So Rashi explains, if they're held captive by Achashverosh, since he was a Melch Gadol, and he knew that he's not going to marry these women, Rashi explains, so the Bilas Onus was all forced upon them. So therefore, they're going to be Mutter. But the Ben Netzar, which are Stam Listim, so that situation, we assume it was done by Ratzon. And then the Gemara says, Listus alistus lokasha. This too also, there's not a stira. Haba ben netzer, haba listim dalma. Also, the ben netzer, I don't know ben netzer refers to be honest. There's types of listim, it sounds like, a particular group of robbers and bandits. But by ben netzer, they're going to be usher. These types of listos would be usher, because we're afraid that they did this biraton, but listus ba'alma. So then we assume that it wasn't done biraton, it was only done ba'ones. And Gemara says, ben netzer, hasam karle melech. Halcha Karle Listim, there's a stira. Once we refer to Ben Netzer as a Malchus, once we call them Listim, of course, in Gavi Achashverosh Listim, with respect to relative to Achashverosh, they're considered Listim, who? Gavi Listim Dalma Malchus, but with regard to other bandits, they are more a formalized, structured type of mafia.
They like sieged a city and then they like appointed themselves rulers over that city.
So they had this middle ground of being somewhat of a Malchus, sometimes
a
Listim.
They sort of ruled and they stayed there for a while, so there were some more relationships that were built. So,
okay, Shkoyach.
Shkoyach.